and welcome to Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo. I'm Ryan Bickle. On today's show, we have a very special guest, Mark Vukovic, President and CEO of Blank Park Zoo. Mark, how are you doing?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you?
I'm doing great. And Jessie Lowry is joining us as well. She's the Conservation Director here at Blank Park Zoo. And Jessie, start the show for us.
Thanks so much, Ryan. Great to be here. As always, I like to start by saying a few words about Blank Park Zoo and its mission to save animals in the wild. Our mission is to inspire an appreciation of our natural world through conservation, education, recreation, and research. And I like to call it a window to the wild, a place where we invite the community and schools and families to come and get to look into the eyes of a snow leopard, see the amazing agility of a sea lion, and feel that sense of awe that we all feel when we see these beautiful animals. But then our job is to turn that sense of awe into a real conservation action, some kind of behavior change that's actually going to make a difference to wild populations and our environment. And Blank Park Zoo is a real leader in conservation in the community and in the state, and we help save animals in a multitude of ways. We are as green as possible in our daily operations. Being sustainable, using less plastic, all of these things that we hear all the time really do have a direct impact on wildlife, especially native wildlife here in Iowa. I always like to say if you want to get the most bang for your buck, you should take care of your local environment. And we've got several programs that we do here at the zoo, including removal of invasive plant species from local parks, encouraging the planting of butterfly gardens through Plant Grow Fly, and many other collaborations with local organizations around the community. We also breed captive breeding of endangered and rare animals here at the zoo. Of course, our most famous, Tumani, the baby eastern black rhino, only 800 left in captivity and the wild combined. So she will go on to hopefully make more baby eastern black rhinos and really hedge against extinction, hedge against the poaching crisis that's happening in the wild. But the bread and butter of what a zoo can do to save animals is the support of field organizations, those people and organizations that are on the front lines working to save the animals in our range countries. And of course, we support field programs in Namibia for giraffe, in Indonesia for rhino, and hornbills in Thailand and more. And a lot of this success has been built on the passion and enthusiasm of our president and CEO. And we're excited, Mark, to have you here today. So welcome again.
Well, thank you for having me.
Mark, let's start out with talking just a little bit about your background and how you ended up here at Blank Park Zoo.
I'm a resident of the Des Moines area. I went to Valley High School and Iowa State University, graduated with a degree in business, a minor in economics, and a minor in biology. Waited until I was a senior to declare a major, so I had to really do a lot that last year. Went into a family business and bought that family business in 1990. Actually, I'm a retired Ford dealer is my first profession. And in 2007, sold the dealership and was chair of the YMCA. I'd always been involved in children's charities. I've been chair of the YMCA Partner with Youth, chairman and president of the Variety Club, involved in Special Olympics, Good Samaritan Urban Ministries, and think that the future of this country surrounds what our children are taught and what they and how they grow up as adults. And was sitting at a Y fundraiser when a gentleman leaned over and said, "I'm doing a search for a new CEO at the zoo, and you ought to apply." And I laughed and said, "I'm a car dealer, retired." And he said, "Well, you have construction experience. You're involved in the community. You know the people that we need to, the zoo needs to get close to raise money. And you like kids, and the zoo is a kids organization." So I applied, and 60 days later, it was down to three. And I said to my wife, "I might get this job. What am I going to do?" And I did get the job. And it's been the most rewarding 8 years of my 40-year business career. Every day is a treat. You know, I joke that it's one of the few businesses in Iowa that you know everybody that's coming to see you is happy. And that's one of the things I liked most about the first few weeks or months was people were excited to be here and excited to see what we have to offer.
Well, I agree that everybody here that works at the zoo is very passionate, and we're lucky to work in a field where we really do love our jobs and come every day and are happy to see those children and family coming through the gates. And I'll also agree that many of those skills from your past, both professionally and through the organizations that you've been involved with, have translated well to the zoo world. Well,
thank you.
So let's talk about your experience here at the zoo and how it's changed from your first day to today.
We are a private zoo, 100% private. We receive no permanent public funds. The only public monies the zoo receives on an annual basis are Bravo dollars from the hotel motel tax that we receive along with 80 or 90 other organizations. So we are pretty much operating on our own abilities to raise money and operate the business side of the zoo to make it all work. When I took over in 2009, the foundation was managing the city zoo. We had an agreement with the city to run the zoo for the city. The city had not done a very good job, and the private sector came in. The great people of Des Moines, the Meredith Corporation, Principal, Wells Fargo, the Hubbles, the Greist, and were willing to take the risk of running the zoo. I followed Terry Rich, who was the first CEO after they became a nonprofit entity. In 2009, after I took over, we determined that to really take the zoo to the next level and grow the zoo for the conservation message that we wanted to achieve, that we really needed to be free of the restrictions of a public entity like the city. And we bought the zoo back in 2010 from the city of Des Moines. And so we are totally nonprofit. That let us make our own mission statement, our own strategic plan. It let us build the zoo in the way we wanted to build the zoo. It let us invest money outside of Iowa, outside of the country for conservation issues. And that was the start of the zoo really growing, was taking it private and making it a private institution.
One of the leading parts of our mission today is conservation and saving animals in the wild, and that's what this show is all about. So can you describe, Mark, in your own words, what you think the role of a modern zoo is in saving animals?
Well, I think it's a multifaceted mission. There's pieces to it. And I think the first piece is that you hear people say animals shouldn't be in captivity. Well, that you can define that a number of different ways. The modern zoo has developed into a institution that takes better care of animals than probably any institution in North America. We have two full-time veterinarians. We have three vet techs. We have an animal hospital that we opened in conjunction with Iowa State University. So senior vet students make a rotation through the zoo. And we spent last year, out of a $7 million budget, over $500,000 in animal care. And one of the things I joke about when I do speeches is that the animals at Blank Park Zoo have better health care than I do. I think that most people don't realize that the health care level of a zoo in captivity is so high. Number two, a captive animal, in many cases, we have probably 14 or 15 species that are in the critically endangered list, that there may be more animals in captivity than there are in the wild. And if you believe institutions outside of the zoo world, for National Geographic, for example, who has stated that zoos are the Noah's Ark of the 21st century, the last place for animals to go against the rising tide of extinction. You mentioned the rhino and herd genes. We have two cassowaries, or maybe only 1,500 cassowaries, an Australian bird species left in the wild. We have the attix, which is a northern African antelope species that is now extinct in the wild, and the only place they exist is in captivity. And we hope to, as an institution with other institutions, over the next 3 or 4 years, breed enough to take them back to a protected preserve in northern Africa and reintroduce them to the wild. So zoos provide a genetic bank, a genetic safe bank, for these endangered species that are becoming more and more endangered in the wild. What the zoo did for me, and what I hope it does for the public, is it doesn't take but a visit or two, if you are engaged through our website, through the emails that we send out, to realize what's happening. And just, 40,000 elephants a year being killed for their ivory. Black rhinos, 800 left in the wild, and they're still killing 10 or 12 a month, even though most of them are in protected areas, for their horns. The black rhino horn a pair of horns for a black rhino can be worth $500,000 on the open market. I think having animals in captivity that close to extinction causes people to think, and hopefully that will engage them in action when it comes to what's going on. When we had our baby rhino, we had 10 million hits in not a very long period of time. BBC picked up the coverage, the television, they had 1.9 million hits in London, in England. And, you know, Good Morning America, 800,000 hits. We showed a video of the baby's bath, and we had that same reaction. A lot of those people would never have knew what a black rhino looked like, let alone how close to the extinction they are. And having that, those two animals in captivity that had a baby, it helps preserve genetic matter, and it really is, they're an ambassador to what's going on in the world. So I think zoos are miniature warehouses of information that needs to be saved, genetic information, information for the public to understand what's going on.
So talk about, you know, we talk a lot of in acronyms here at the zoo, as in every workplace. Yeah. One of the acronyms is AZA, another one is SAFE, and another one's SSP. Could you take us through all three of those things and why they're important?
Yes, I could. AZA is the Zoo Association, American Zoo Association that we're involved in, and they are the governing body for 234 zoos in North America and South America. Each one of those zoos is accredited. The accreditation is every 5 years, and it takes a week for them to come in and inspect you and make you understand what you need to prove on that next year to keep your accreditation. They also are the warehouse of knowledge for all the animals in captivity in North America, South America, and Europe under an organization called 360. They have the genetic and physical history of every animal in captivity. So when our little girl gets to be 2 years old, they know what her genetic makeup is. They know where her ancestry came from, and they'll be able to match her to a young male giraffe where their genes are the best to preserve the gene line of the black rhino. So we are all in it for the good of the animals. We don't pay for any animals that come to the zoo that are endangered. The girl came from Miami. Our little boy came from Sioux Falls. Both zoo directors called and said, we hope you get them to fall in love quickly and breed as often as they can. A year from now, when our little girl is two, they'll call me and say, we'd like you to send your girl to another zoo in North America and match up with another male from somewhere else, and I will be tickled that our girl can go and start doing her own breeding. And so that is some of the things they do from the AZA side. We also have an SSP program, which is Species Survival Program, and they are rated three levels, and the most level is the critically endangered species. The Blank Park Zoo has 12 or 13 animals that could be considered critically endangered in our collection. Our Alma River tiger, which used to be called the Siberian tiger, 400 left in captivity. They don't call it the Siberian tiger anymore because there's so few left in Siberia. We have the attics that are totally extinct in the wild. A giraffe had just been put on the endangered species list, 600,000 in 1990, 70,000 to 80,000 in 2017. Lions are down to 20,000 in the wild. So as you hear these numbers and hear what's going on, you start to understand that if you don't have zoos educating people to what's happening, and you don't have zoos protecting the genetic matter of those animals, easily in a generation, a lot of these animals you see in captivity could be gone. What was the third organization you asked me about?
SAFE.
SAFE. Saving Animals from Extinction. That is a sub-organization that the Zoo Society has formed, and they have put 100 animals on it, 1 through 100, and they're taking 10 at a time, and all 232 zoos are focusing extra conservation dollars, not the dollars they're using for their own programs and what they currently have going on throughout the world and in their own locales, but adding those dollars. And the first one they saved was the African penguin. We have two animals in the top 10, the tiger and the black rhino, that are both being focused on. And all zoos are coming together and raising $150, $170 million to put at these projects each year, and then they modify the project list the next year. Say, well, we think we've saved the African penguin, so let's add another species to that group that we're going to work on.
the animals on the safe list have a couple things in common. Like you said, they're all critically endangered, which means they could be gone from the face of the earth in one generation. And we also know about those animals that if we could collaborate through SAFE and other programs, if we could get enough time resources and expert resources and financial resources, that they can be saved. And so the SAFE program is really an exciting thing. Let's talk a little bit about, you mentioned AZA several times. Let's talk about the difference between USDA exhibiting facilities and AZA. I think there's about 6,000 USDA.
Maybe even 8,000.
Yep.
The USDA is the bureaucratic government entity that runs, that watches out for zoos. And they come every year or twice a year and inspect your facility. Their regulations are geared toward anybody that's exhibiting animals. So it could be Bear Country in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. It could be a petting zoo in Fort Dodge. It could be a private institution in Pennsylvania that has snakes, reptile gardens. And when you add all those together, including zoos, it comes to between 6,000 and 8,000, depending on the year and how many people have acquired a permit. That is a much looser regulatory organization. And any zoos that are AZA accredited are leaps and bounds beyond the minimum requirements from the USDA.
Let's talk a little bit about a recent happening. We just had a few new babies here at the zoo. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, we. Since I've been here, we've had a male lion and two female lions. They were rescued from a roadside. The female lions were rescued from a roadside zoo in Texas, and were not able to breed. And so we've had these three great lions that have aged and died at the zoo over the last 16 years. And about 5 years ago, we had a male lion to replace Cha-Cha who died, who is named Deuce. And he came from Madison, Wisconsin. He is a South African Hercules strain of the lion. And he is 500 pounds, and he could play the part in the Lion King. He is just a beautiful animal, very engaging, friendly for a male animal. And we've had him for 5 years. And after our two female lions died, we let them live out their lives at the zoo. We then received two young, gorgeous females from the Santa Barbara Zoo. We did not pay for that either because lions are endangered. And we brought them in and we chose one to be Deuce's mate and put the other one on birth control. And after a very short period of time, they were successful. And we just had a pregnancy that came to fruition. And we have three cubs, two female and a little male. The male is not quite as large as the female, and we're doing some intervention to help him grow. And we hope by spring or summer, there'll be three bubbly little cubs running around at the Blank Park Zoo. Those cubs, when they become adults, will then move on to other zoos and be mated up with other animals to continue the lion breeding program that will help preserve their genetic makeup.
And we always try to connect the births and the animals and the situations that we're having here at Blank Park Zoo to the wild. So in honor of the birth of these cubs and the lions that we have here, we have financially donated to Ruaha Carnivore Project in Tanzania. And that is led by Amy Dickman. And it's a really fantastic project where they work in the field trying to decrease all kinds of human-wildlife conflict. You can imagine the folks who are pastoralists, who live around the lion natural habitat, have a lot of conflict with wild lions. And they've had a lot of success really decreasing that conflict. One way that lions are decreasing in this area is through a coming-of-age ceremony for young men. And Amy and her organization have tried successfully to replace that with sporting events. And so that's a really great example of going in that holistic view of conservation, teaming up, working with the local stakeholders to solve these problems in a very sustainable way that benefits both the local people and the wildlife. And that's really the key guidelines to all of the projects that Blank Park Zoo supports. We consider individual animals, animal populations, the environment, and the health of the local people in all of these areas. Let's talk a little bit about some of the conservation events that we do here at the zoo to try to get the message out and get the support from the community, like the speaker series, Art for Wild.
First, I'd like to follow up on what you just said about the issues in Africa. One of the things we hope our zoo does is it makes people aware about those issues. And you can, the animals of Africa in particular, in Asia, around the world, are under such multiple pressures. You have the environment changing where the Sahara Desert's growing at 20 miles a year to the south into the savanna, so it's taking up spaces that lions and giraffe and hoofstock could live in as it becomes drier and more desert-like. You have the population of Africa growing at 7 or 8 or 9% a year, and most of the countries are governments that aren't taking care of their people. And so the people are having to rely on poaching and those kind of activities to supplement their life so they can live. Then you have the fact is that there's just less wild in the world for these animals to live on. And so they have no habitat to grow. They have no prey to eat. And it's all happening at once. And as the environment becomes... As we heat up our environment, it's just putting more and more pressure on these animals. And that endangered species list that we've talked about, where there's 100 animals on it that the zoo are worried about, that endangered species list, if you really did it right, there'd be thousands and thousands of species that are going to become extinct if we don't do something. And that leads into why we're having a conservation lecture series and why we do conservation events every year in February, March, and April. Usually it's a weeknight. We bring in a speaker. Most of them have spent more time on site in Africa, in Asia, in Sumatra, wherever they are working on their pet project. And we bring them in, and they talk for an hour, and we ask questions, and they bring whatever books or articles they've written where people can purchase this and engage them afterwards one-on-one. And we believe that that is another way to inform the people of Des Moines who are really so far removed from what's going on in these wild areas of the world that are disintegrating, that really helps make that happen.
And I'll tell folks what our speakers are this year. It's the first Thursday in February, March, and April every year. This year, we're going to welcome Ian Nichols. He's a National Geographic wildlife photographer. The next month, we will welcome Susie Lewis. She's the founder and director of Conservation Fusion. They work in Madagascar to conserve lemurs and tortoises through educating local communities. And we also will welcome Dr. Michelle Miller, who is an exotic animal vet who works with elephants and rhinos. And as she says, all things big and gray in South Africa. So we're really excited for that speaker series.
Yeah, and those people, we hope they leave a message where it might trip somebody's thought processes to become involved, and whether it's money or buying their book or just educating their children about what's going on in the world. I think it's a great series.
Let's talk about the future. What's your hope for wildlife in the future?
Well, my hope would be that no more animals go extinct in the future. I think that is not going to happen. I don't think we haven't reached a tipping point to the good to totally save species. Just 2 weeks ago, the vaquita porpoise dolphin that lives in the Baja was down to less than 60 species, 60 animals. The Mexican government, in conjunction with AZA, put millions of dollars into a plan to try to rescue all that were left to save them from being fished, killed, netted. And it appears that the species had declined too long. And the last article I read over the email from the people that were involved think that it's past the point of saving. And that species is right now in the process of becoming extinct. And that's in our hemisphere, less than a two-day drive from where we're living right now. So the goal would be to convince enough people in Des Moines, Iowa, North America, because we are the richest country in the world. We have the most money to be able to influence things. We use the most of the natural resources and have people start to realize what actions they can take to save not only animals in Africa, Asia, Mexico, South America, but what can they do to protect the animals and environment even locally. And we are involved locally. We help restore the prairie chicken to Iowa, Jesse talked about some of the things we're doing with invasive species. We're trying to plant enough butterfly pollinator habitat to keep the monarchs to survive and help the honeybee from becoming more extinct in the Midwest. We're involved in water quality. We want to help with the Two River Project. So my goal is to take the 480,000 visitors we have a year and the 12 or 13,000 members and have them not just come to the zoo and go home and say, wow, what we're doing to the wildlife of the world is just awful. Get them engaged and have them become active.
And what do you see as the future for Blank Park Zoo?
I think when you see where we were at 6 years ago when we bought the zoo back from the city of Des Moines and where we're at today when it comes to how we're considered a leader in the conservation and education field, I think if you look forward and we continue to grow our conservation and our research like we have the last 5 years, we'll be a noted institution in America for doing things to help the wildlife of the world and the environment of the world. You know, we're concerned about the reefs in Australia and the temperature of the water as much as we are about our black rhino in Uganda.
We only have a couple minutes left, but I want to make sure we don't forget to mention that we're sending our staff out into the field. A lot of these organizations are literally in a tent with a dying laptop battery, you know, working, writing the grants and doing everything, wearing all the hats. We have a very expert staff. We have experts in husbandry and veterinary care and graphic design and videography, and we're sending our staff to the field to help boost those efforts.
You know, we let staffs apply for scholarships, and we scholarship every year 2, 3, or 4 people to go to their chosen field and work in the wild, anywhere from 2 weeks to a month.
Mark, I just have to say I'm really proud of what we've accomplished over the years and really excited about how we can continue to save animals.
And real quick, we got to mention Art for the Wild. Is it end of January, 1st of February?
February every year.
At February every year, we have a beautiful event where we ask local artists and regional artists to give a piece of art to us. Everybody that comes buys a ticket and they get to draw a number and take a piece of art home. A lot of the art is wildlife or nature art. We have an auction. We have a speaker. It's a great event and all the money goes for a conservation effort and we'd love to have people come.
Well, thanks a lot. That's a fascinating conversation. And thanks so much for being here. If you want to learn more about Blank Park Zoo, go to our website, blankparkzoo.com. On there, you can learn all about our dates and times and hours for all our events, our conservation events, or our other events, our spring and summer events. And we have events all winter long, too. So blankparkzoo.com. If you want to see pictures of our lion cubs, you can head over to our Facebook page, facebook.com/blankparkzoo. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Thanks so much for joining us, and tune in again for Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo.